This is the Bloomington Review with Jim Inman.
On News Talk 96.1 and AM 1370 WGCL.
Good evening, Bloomington. Welcome to the Bloomington Review here on WGCL. Jim Inman here with you. Friday, July 8th, or if you are waking up with us on Saturday, glad that you are part of the show and dialed into 1370 or 96.1 on your FM dial. And it's been a long week for a lot of people, and I wish that I could be a little bit more positive. If you tuned in this morning, Friday morning, to Glass in the Morning, Glass and I were on for the first hour and giving you some updates about the tragedy in Dallas, Texas, which is, I don't know if you want to call it a result, a consequence, a ripple effect piece of the other tragedies in recent days and weeks across the country, and it's just a little bit tough to find a positive note sometimes. And we'll talk a little bit more about this as the show goes on this evening. I'm flying solo, I'll tell you that in advance. Dr. Pillar is on assignment this week, but hopefully we'll see him back soon. We've got your local news and sports and some good stuff with the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame, which we'll talk about in a little bit. And, of course, your forecast for the weekend as well. But it just seems that one thing after the other is happening in this country, and with social media and the ability to Facebook Live and broadcast things and tweet things out immediately and whatnot, it's suddenly right in our face when a tragedy happens. And there are so many people who utilize their voices in putting that information out, that consequently there are a lot of things that can be misconstrued, misunderstood. It's just really rough. It's been one of those things where you have a good day, but in the back of your mind, that's just something to think about is always going on, and it just seems so elevated right now, and I don't know where we go with it from here. So we'll talk a little bit more about that as the show goes on this evening, or if you're catching us again Saturday morning as you wake up with us. Hopefully, though, for the most part, though, we can have a fun, light hour, if you will, here on the program. Of course, facebook.com/TheBloomingtonReview. You can catch up there with all the shows and information, and also WGCLRadio.com. If you miss any part of our program or any of the other local shows, you can head over there and catch up with what is going on at WGCLRadio.com. It was a good 4th of July, however. The rain kicked in and caused a lot of problems with fireworks displays and things like that. Julie Warren, the Bloomington lady from Visit Bloomington, joined Glass and I for a little bit this morning as well, and then I had to take off. And we talked to Tanya from the Monroe County Fairgrounds. They have their big fireworks display, Saturday evening out there, starting at 5 p.m. with a classic car show, street rods, hot rods, unique vehicles, a couple local bands playing, and then about 9:45, 9:50 is when the fireworks display will happen out at the Monroe County Fairgrounds. If you want to stay on a different side of town, Ellettsville at Edgewood High School, they're doing the fireworks Saturday night, about the same time, a little bit after dusk, 9:45, 10 p.m. for those, so you can head out to the Mustang Corral and enjoy the fireworks display out there. So there's a lot of good things going on. The parade, Keith Klein and I always have a good time with that, and despite the rain forecast and the potential for major water coming down, it ended up kind of breaking for us. We had some rain throughout the parade on Monday morning, but for the most part, it was fairly dry, and kudos to all of those kids who got out there and participated and hula hooped and flipped on their hands and did handsprings and all of that good stuff. It's a classic Americana parade of what we provide in Bloomington, and very happy to have been an MC with that. Speaking of a few minutes ago talking about Facebook Live and trying to find a good use for it, if you will, and so I Facebook Live the video. If you look for me on Facebook, privacy settings and all that aside, this should be available to be seen. But I was amazed at so many people who actually searched it out and watched it over the last 4 days or so. I actually had about 3,000 or 4,000 views of the parade, as well as a separate video of the opening ceremonies. And so Facebook Live can be kind of a fun little thing if you use it right, take advantage, all of that good stuff. We're going to take a break, though. When we come back, let's get you your local forecast and local news. And again, we'll talk about the latest going on in Dallas and some of the other issues taking place across the country. A man who fired on a Tennessee highway was motivated by police shootings of black people, according to authorities. It's just, gosh, when your kids are seeing this as well, this is not the environment that you want them to remember from their childhood and grow up believing is the norm. It's not. It's not at all. So we'll take a break, come back. We'll try and lighten things up a little bit over the next hour. Stay with me here on the Bloomington Review. Welcome back to the Bloomington Review. Jim Inman here with you on your Friday, July 8th, and the forecast for the weekend is not too shabby, especially if you're going to head out to the Monroe County Fairgrounds or to Ellettsville to Edgewood High School for the fireworks on Saturday evening. Friday night, tonight, 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms, mainly before 7 p.m. So if there's any rain outside, I can't tell where I'm at the moment. Should be wrapping up soon. Partly cloudy with a low around 67. Saturday, beautiful outside. Sunny, high near 83. Saturday night, partly cloudy, a low around 60. And then on Sunday, sunny again with a high near 82. Beautiful weekend forecast for you. Looking to be dry on Monday next week, then a 30% chance of rain Tuesday and Wednesday right now with highs in the upper 80s early next week. All your weather all the time right here at WGCL Radio and WGCLRadio.com. It was announced earlier this week that Mark Moore, who has led the 2010 merger of Bloomington Hospital and Clarion Health to form IU Health Bloomington Hospital, as well as last year revealing plans to build a new facility by the year 2020, Mark Moore has announced his retirement as president of the South Central Region of Indiana University Health. He was quoted in the Herald Times this week as saying, quote, "I've seen dramatic progress and growth in our institution. I feel very good and proud of what we've done over that tenure, but 14 years is a good run in my institution as well as my position." Moore was named president and CEO of Bloomington Hospital back in 2002 when the 260-bed hospital employed a little over 300 physicians and had 17-plus thousand annual admissions. In the 14 years since, Moore has overseen a multi-million-dollar hospital expansion and renovation, a merger and a renaming, plus a significant increase in outpatient services for a patient population spanning 11 southern Indiana counties. Moore is 64 years young and looks forward to keeping up with the new hospital's developments while spending more time with his family and increasing number of grandchildren. He said if he was 10 years younger, he'd be all in for the transition into the new facility, but he's going to take the step down, saying, quote, "It's going to be an exciting decade." So who will be taking his place? Well, Mark Moore will be stepping down officially on November 1st. Matthew Bailey is the chief operating officer for the region and will take his place as president of the South Central Region. Bailey was named operating officer for IU Health Bloomington last October, previously was the CEO of IU Health West Hospital up in Avon, Indiana, as well as the CEO of Good Samaritan Hospital in Vincennes, Indiana. Out on the west side of town, in Ellettsville, the final piece of the puzzle is now in place for the Seven Oaks Classical School, as they received confirmation on Wednesday this week of a $2 million loan from the Indiana State Board of Education to help cover construction costs at the new charter school. Construction at Eagles Landing, for those of you like myself who grew up in Ellettsville, the old Ellettsville Elementary School, is expected to begin this week with a full roof replacement. A construction company will also be renovating 55,000 square feet of the 90,000 square foot facility, including fire alarms, completely restoring all restrooms, as well as interior and exterior surfaces. The elementary school until 2002. And if you have been out there, you know that it is under a need for major renovation. Seven Oaks purchased the building last month for $630,000. The tuition-free charter school, set to open this August, applied for the loan at the end of May as part of the Charter and Innovative School Advance Program, an initiative approved in 2015 with a biennial appropriation of $50 million. The board of the Seven Oaks Classical School has hired Triangle Incorporated, which is a construction company that has renovated other charter schools across the country. But of course, they needed to find a way to pay for the work. And as of the school board meeting on Tuesday evening, the school had $55,000 in cash on hand and was discussing a letter of credit to help pay utility bills totaling $21,000. Now, Seven Oaks is one of five schools across the state to receive a loan, but was by far the largest recipient, doubling the next largest loan. They had applied for $2.6 million based on the construction cost expected, and they will amend plans to reflect the loan that was received. As the HT quoted or wrote in their article this week, remember, this is what it is, a loan. It will be repaid at 1% interest over the next 10 years, and those payments are garnished from state tuition support each month. They have 40 days to get this renovation done out in Ellettsville before the planned August 15th start date. And Headmaster Stephen Shipp said Tuesday evening at the board meeting that there is no plan B in place should construction be delayed. So we'll learn more about that in the days and weeks ahead. A very sobering story out of Bloomington earlier this week. An 86-year-old grandmother, her emergency alert alarm went off late July 4th. And when police arrived, they found her in, on her bedroom floor covered in blood from a brutal beating she said was inflicted by her grandson, who was standing on the porch in blood-soaked clothes, according to police. Zachary Scott Emswiller, 19 years old, could offer no account of what had happened, according to police. His grandmother was transported to IU Health Bloomington Hospital, then transferred to IU Health Methodist up in Indianapolis because of the extent of her injuries. As of Friday afternoon, she is in critical but stable condition. Emswiller was examined and detained at IU Health, then booked into Monroe County Jail at 6:44 a.m. Tuesday morning on preliminary charges of attempted murder and criminal confinement. He lived at the West Point Addition residence with his grandmother. Now, again, all of this took place late in the evening on the 4th of July. Ambulance personnel arrived after responding to a life alert notification. They knocked on the front door, heard yelling, quote, get back from inside, and immediately they called police. Officers arrived. They found the 19-year-old Emswiller standing on the front porch with his cell phone to his ear. And according to the BPD news release, officers attempted to speak with the man, and he began fighting with them before ultimately being taken into custody. With all of that being said, when the police entered the entrance of the home, they saw blood in the living room, on the hallway walls, and found the injured woman lying on her bedroom floor, her eyes swollen shut. Blood splatter on the walls, cuts, bruises, some pretty extreme injuries, to say the least, and especially to be inflicted on an 86-year-old woman. The grandmother said that Emswiller, whose court records date indicate he's about 5'8 and 125, had scratches on his neck, likely inflicted by his grandmother. She defended herself, and he told Bloomington police officer Sarah Carnes he and his grandmother were the only ones at the house and denied knowing anything about her being hurt. He could not explain his bloody clothes. Oh, goodness, as Glass would say, goodness. And finally, on a more positive note, Stepping Stones was able to raise more than $17,000 this week in emergency funds that were needed by the end of today in order to keep the at-risk youth shelter from being closed. The Community Foundation of Bloomington and Monroe County, South Central Community Action Program, Van Buren Township, and Gether, which is a nonprofit that invests in other nonprofit and social services initiatives, provided the bulk of the $17,000 funding. An online crowdfunding campaign also raised more than $3,000 as of Thursday, and individual contributions round out the $17,900-plus Stepping Stones had received in total earlier this week. According to Alyssa Fornell, who is the Stepping Stones Executive Director, these checks have ranged anywhere from $10 to over $1,000 and definitely helped the organization after they learned at the end of last month that they would not be receiving Emergency Solutions Grant funding from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development this year. It was a mistakenly completed grant application, automatically disqualifying the youth shelter from funding. Last year, a almost $56,000 emergency solutions grant funded the shelter's maintenance, employee salaries, insurance, and other operating costs. And without that grant, Stepping Stones was forced to lay off its program manager, reduce part-time staff, and cut Fresnel's salary. The $17,000 raised over the past week will keep the shelter open, as well as its five residents in their beds. However, Stepping Stones needs closer to a total of $20,000 to spend the next several months working toward a merger with another nonprofit. We're going to take a break. When we come back, let's talk a little bit about the situation in Dallas and the updates there. Stay with me. We'll be right back here on the Bloomington Review. I know that most of our listeners have been tuned in throughout the day and catching up as well on social media with our Facebook and Twitter feeds and all of that, and keeping up as to what has gone on over the last, I guess you could say, really 24 hours in Dallas. The latest here this evening, as we know, is that five police officers in Dallas were assassinated, and I think that is the appropriate word, by a gunman. According to USA Today, a 25-year-old Texan who told police negotiators he, quote, wanted to kill white people, end quote, apparently acted alone when he went on a shooting rampage during a protest march downtown. As we mentioned, killing five officers, injuring seven more, including two civilians, in a carefully planned ambush. And this all comes to a USA Today here on a Friday afternoon. The shooter, who did not have a criminal record, was identified as Micah Xavier Johnson, 25 years old, of Mesquite, Texas. It's a Dallas suburb. The official who made these comments to USA Today wished to remain anonymous as he was not authorized to comment publicly. Although police feared for hours that at least one other sniper was involved and on the run, the official said Johnson is now believed to be the lone gunman for this tragedy. At least three others who were detained by police as possible suspects may have no connection with the attack or Johnson, according to the official. A little bit of background about him. Johnson served 6 years in the U.S. Army Reserve, including an eight-month tour in Afghanistan. And he opened fire late on Thursday evening as police marshaling demonstrators peacefully, ladies and gentlemen, were protesting recent police-involved shootings of African-American men in Louisiana and Minnesota. The shots rang out. Several police officers went down. Protesters and bystanders scrambled or fell to the pavement, and as I mentioned, two civilians were wounded in the gunfire. The gunman was eventually chased into a building parking lot where negotiators talked to him for almost an hour, according to Dallas Police Chief David Brown. Brown said in a statement the suspect said he was upset about Black Lives Matter, referring to the grassroots activist group. He said he was upset about the recent police shootings. He said he was upset at white people. He said he wanted to kill white people, especially white police officers. Brown said the suspect was not affiliated with any other groups, quote, and stated that he did this alone, end quote. After the talks broke down, according to the USA Today, the heavily armed gunman was killed by police using a robot-controlled explosive device. And this is according to Police Chief Brown. A law enforcement official told USA Today that a rifle and a handgun were recovered from the scene where Johnson died. It's the deadliest day for law enforcement since 9/11. Glass and I talked about this earlier today. Those terrorist attacks, obviously hundreds and hundreds of individuals, many emergency crews as well as police officers were involved in that tragedy as well. Today's incident, or last night's incident, involved, again, ten different police officers, five of which perished in the situation. Three of the injured officers were in critical condition, undergoing surgery earlier on Friday. The last major ambush, according to the USA Today, that targeted police occurred at a coffee shop in Washington State back in 2009, when a gunman walked in and opened fire on four city police officers working on their laptop computers as they prepared for their work shifts. All of those officers died as well, and the gunman died 2 days later in a shootout with the police. It's one of those things. It's a terrible, terrible tragedy, and I am not enough of a speaker, if you will, to really address the feelings, the emotions that everyone has. Everybody's perception of this is their own, and they are completely and totally entitled to it. There are people who have felt concern about situations that they were not necessarily involved in any way, shape, or form, things that happened in other parts of the country. But as what happened in Dallas, they were peacefully protesting. They were trying to acknowledge that there is a situation, there is a fear in this country right now on many different levels for many different audiences, and it's not good. And you compound that with the benefits, and I hate even saying that word, of social media, where people can put their voice out to the masses instantly. There's no filter for that anymore. There is no editing, if you will. There's no ability to really take something back once it's thrown out there. You all know, if you go onto Yahoo or CNN or Google or whatever, you can look for somebody and they're quoting themselves. And I'm talking about the celebrities, quote, of the world, the ones who may be in Hollywood, they may be athletes, whatever the case may be, they're putting out their statements right away. Remember back not that long ago when it was an event almost, if you will, when you would have a Barbara Walters interview. And everybody has their favorite journalist, if you will. But when Barbara Walters would interview somebody back in the 70s and 80s, that was an experience. I mean, there would be an hour-long program devoted to Princess Diana, Michael Jordan, Oprah Winfrey, all of these different celebrities, fixtures, if you will, in modern culture that allowed them to address the audience. They didn't have the ability to get on a smartphone or a tablet computer and type up a short message and send it out to 14 or 400 million followers, however many they had. They had limited opportunity to really get their words out. And consequently, they had somebody sitting in front of them who gave them the eye, if you will, of saying, well, what you just said doesn't make sense, or why would you feel that way? I mean, there was an instant response. Now, people can type something up and they send it out on Twitter and it's just done. I mean, there's no repercussions, if you will. Consequently with this, and this is I'm trying to find somebody to bring on the show that can, excuse me, talk more to this point than I can, is the anonymity that the internet offers anymore. That you can create a profile on a social media platform or on a email platform like Yahoo or Gmail or whatever the case may be, you can create this persona and you can go on and comment on stories and you can say the most ridiculous things, the most scary things, and you're sitting in a library or on your laptop in a coffee shop or whatever, but you're putting up some really disturbing things that people are reading and believing. And that ripple effect is just becoming more and more concerning in my mind. I graduated from the IU School of Journalism. I believe that there is an integrity issue that we are strongly losing every single day. The accountability, the concern of what I say can never be taken back. Some of you may have heard the story of the teacher. This is there's no location tied to this, if you will, but a teacher is trying to explain to his students about hurting someone's feelings, if you will, and he takes a china plate, something that can break, and he shows it to the kids, and he drops it on the floor, and it doesn't shatter, it just breaks into four or five chunks, if you will, and they glue it back together, and the example is that, you know, when you make a comment out there and you hurt someone, yes, it can be put back together, but it's not the same. And that's where we are headed more and more. We have a presidential race right now, and I don't care what your politics are. You have to admit it's a show right now. I don't know how else to put it. You have two candidates of very little bipartisan agreement in any way, shape, or form. You have people who are throwing out a variety of ideas that can be very concerning. And, you know the trajectory that this country is on is worrisome for a lot of people. And we're in this Midwest culture, if you will, of really believing in the best of men and women around us. And some of us still believe in leaving a door unlocked at night and whatnot. And that's changing. You no longer let your kids really go out and trick-or-treat in a neighborhood that you've never been to. You no longer simply go and knock on a neighbor's door at night because you need something. Closeness, that community feel is disappearing, and that's something that a lot of us need to think about and take action on. The last thing I'm going to say, and again, I'm not the expert at all of this. I'm blessed with a platform 1 hour a week to come on and talk with all of you and talk about things that I really enjoy. This is not a topic that I want to talk about by a long shot. But I think that as we move forward, we need to remember that clicking like, typing amen, retweeting, Facebooking, Instagramming, whatever the case may be, those really aren't signs of making a difference. It may give you a good feel on the inside, but really, what are you doing to make a difference in the world? I'm not saying that I am the example, not by a long shot. What I am saying, though, is we need to look at what we are doing as individuals to really make an impact on the future for not just ourselves, but for the kids, for our communities, for everyone. And if we're not trying to better the world's not going to get any better. That's what I've got to say about that. Let's take a break. We've got a much lighter topic to talk about, Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame, coming up next weekend. Let's give you a rundown of the class for 2016, and then we'll get more sports and wrap up the show. Stay with me here on the Bloomington Review. If you want to know about the history of Monroe County Athletics, going back not just over the last few years, but the last few decades, really, there's two men in Bloomington who can provide that information to you. One of them is Bob Hamill, the retired sports editor for the Herald Times. The other is our own Joe Smith, Hall of Fame broadcaster. And it's always good to hear from him every Friday morning when I get to be on the show with Glass in the mornings. And Joe and I talked briefly about next week's Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. And we haven't really talked about it here on the show. I think we introduced the class at one point, but I want to give everyone a little bit of a backstory here and a reminder of what's going on next week. And there are tickets still available to go to this. Joe said this morning that they're looking at one of the largest crowds, perhaps over 400, for this year's Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame banquet taking place next Friday, July 15th. So if you want to go to this, number one, you can go for free for a portion of it. Beginning at 4:45 next Friday, there's a meet and greet with the inductees, and that will last about a half hour, 45 minutes or so. Actually, 2 hours. Meet and greet for the public, 4:45 to 6:45 p.m. They'll be taking photos, autographs, all of that good stuff. And then the event actually begins at 6:45 p.m. That's what you need your tickets for the dinner and the banquet and the award ceremony for that. So who are part of the 2016 inaugural class here? Well, Tina Debro is starting off the list. She is a graduate from Bloomington North and was a participant in track and swimming there. She graduated in 1982. She held school records in swimming in the 50 and 100 freestyles, as well as winning 5 letters in track at Indiana University. She also served as assistant track coach at Southern Illinois University, coaching sprinters, hurdlers, and jumpers. Back from 1949, Bobby Dobson, Bloomington High School basketball and baseball player. He was the first Monroe County player to score 1,000 career points and held the career or the county record for 13 years. He scored a record 523 points as a senior with an 18.8 point average. County's first Indiana All-Star, and Bobby Dobson also won the Star of Stars Award for game-high 21 points, including a basket to put his team ahead 66-61 in a win over Kentucky. Dan Grossman, graduate of Bloomington High School class of 1969, was an All-State quarterback with 20 touchdown passes on an unbeaten football team as a senior on the team that launched the South Panthers' 60-game winning streak. He was also a catcher on the Panther State baseball runner-up team, as well as winner of an IHSAA Mental Attitude Award. He's entering the Hall of Fame this year with another Grossman. You might recognize the name Rex Grossman. They're the first father and son to be inducted into the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. Bob Kirk from University School, class of 1965, is also going to be an inductee for the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame next weekend. Was All-State as a two-way tackle and tight end, and was tri-captain of the undefeated 10-0 team back in 1964. He lettered for two years at Indiana University as an offensive tackle, and as a junior started every game for the Big Ten tri-champions as well as the Rose Bowl team, and started as a senior there. He missed playing in the Rose Bowl because of a knee injury suffered at preparations for the game, and he's the only player from University High School and the only lineman from Monroe County to play and start on a Big Ten championship football team. Vern Paff from Ellensville played basketball, class of 1962, led the team to Martinsville Sectionals Championship as a junior, scoring 72 points. He's the county's second 1,000-point scorer and finished with a county record of 1,289 points. Was an Air Force pilot, flew 137 missions in Vietnam as well. Dick Sparks, Bloomington High School class of 1960, is an inductee for both basketball and baseball, a scoring leader for BHS, 23 points in the state final, 4 game against Muncie Central. His brother and Dan is a inductee back in the class of 2013. Marshall Goss is an inductee from Bloomington High School South. He was coached for 22 years And had 29 sectional championships, 11 regional, and 20 conference championships teams at Bloomington High School, and then the predecessor, Bloomington High School South, and then at Indiana University from back in 1999 through 2004, coached six All-Americans, 16 Big Ten champions as well. He's a founding member and director of the Indiana Track and Field and Cross Country Hall of Fame Museum as well. And then who else have we got here? A couple more names here. Marvin Groh. Excuse me, from Bloomington High School baseball. He passed away in 1977, but in 25 years compiled a 352-76 record, which equals an 822 per winning percentage. In a three-year run from 58 to 1960, his teams had a 4-4-2 record, including a 33-game winning streak. Angelo Pizzo is going to be going into the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. He's an IU graduate. Of course, he's the writer and producer of the film Hoosiers, which many believe is the greatest sports movie ever. And no, not this weekend, because it's going to be a nice weekend. But if you ever get a rainy Saturday or Sunday and you need to look for something to get your kids into, this is the movie to watch. I actually just watched it a couple of months back, first time in quite a while. Wonderful, wonderful movie. Angelo Pizzo, also with fellow IU grad David Anspaugh, created the hit film Rudy as well, and just a phenomenal guy. And then the biggest name here on the list, and I don't mean that in a rude way to any of the other inductees, but former IU football coach Bill Mallory. He was coach at Indiana University from 1984 to 1996, became the winningest coach in IU history with 66 wins, twice named the Big Ten Coach of the Year, led the teams to six bowl games, and won two of them as well. He served as an advisor to the Bloomington City Recreation Department and Bloomington Hospital Health and Wellness Committee as well, and has been involved in different organizations across the community supporting kids and youth and athletics. So that is your class of 2016 inductees for the Monroe County Sports Hall of Fame. Again, the ceremony and dinner taking place next Friday, the 15th, at the Monroe County Convention Center right downtown. Meet and greet open to the public, 4:45 to 6:45 p.m. You can go in, get photos with these men and women and their families, and I'm sure there will be a lot of people who played for these folks, played with these folks, so there will be a lot of fun, good memories shared for that. And then if you want tickets for the event, dinner tickets are $40 per person, and you can get that ticket reservation at MCSHOF.com. Again, MCSHOF.com. We're going to take a break. Come back with some more sports for you. Stay with us here on the Bloomington Review. Let's get you a little bit more sports action here on the Bloomington Review. Of course, WGCL Radio is home to your Reds baseball coverage. And we've got a game tonight, Friday night, right after the show against the Miami Marlins. And then on Saturday, July 9th, 4:10 game for that one as well right here on WGCL. Then we've got a few days off for the Reds, and they don't come back to the field until Friday, July 15th, when they welcome Milwaukee to town. That is, again, another 7 o'clock game here on the station, followed by a second game with Milwaukee, on Saturday the 16th, same time, 7 o'clock for that one. Don't forget also, the Brickyard 400 is going to be here on WGCL in just a couple of weeks, Sunday, July 24th. We'll have more information as we get closer to that, but if you're looking for Brickyard 400 coverage, make sure that you tune in right here to WGCL Radio for that. Speaking of tuning in to WGCL, earlier this week on In the Zone, Mike Miller from the Herald Times was on with Dave and Glass talking about Deron Davis. And according to the HT this week, his targeted arrival in Bloomington has been pushed to August now. He's a four-star forward from Colorado and was expected to be on campus this week for the beginning of the third four-week academic session of the summer. However, that was not to be. Coach Tom Crean told the HT last week Davis has academic work to complete before he can move to Bloomington. Crean is quoted as saying he's doing it and he's doing well with it. An IU recruiting target since his eighth grade year. Davis signed with the Hoosiers last November. 6'10 prospect, named Colorado's Mr. Basketball in April this year after a great high school run that saw him set a state record with 441 block shots for his career. He also finished with a little over 1,500 career points at Overland High School in Aurora, Colorado. Overland coach Danny Fisher told the HT in a text message, "The big fella is still here and may not arrive in Bloomington again or until early August. He's hashing through some things he has to finish here in town and has been in constant contact with Coach Crean and staff. I don't have an exact date, but early August is what everyone is expecting." So far right now, according to the HT, Indiana has welcomed three members of its five-man signing class to campus. Freshman guards Devontae Green, Curtis Jones, and Grant Gilo have been enrolled at IU since mid-June. Junior college transfer Freddie McSwain, who is a wing from Neosho Community College in Kansas, is also tending to academic work this summer and is not expected in Bloomington until August. Speaking of IU basketball, Victor Oladipo got some kudos this week. He was added to the 2016 USA Men's Select team. The guard with the Oklahoma City Thunder has been added to the team that will train July 18th through the 21st with the 2016 USA Basketball Men's National Team during its training camp in Las Vegas, Nevada. San Antonio Spurs head coach Greg Popovich, who in October of last year was named head coach of the USA Men's Basketball National Team for the 2017 to 2020 four-year program, will oversee the select team, and Spurs assistant coach Emi Oduka and Villanova University head coach Jay Wright will serve as assistant coaches. Now, Oladipo was named to the 2015-16 USA Basketball National Team last August, and he participated in the 2015 USA Basketball Showcase, made 25 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists, and a couple of steals in 23 minutes of action for the blue team there. So nice to see our man Victor Oladipo getting some love there. On the basketball scene, on the local side of things, this is the rumor, if you will. Nothing official yet, but J.B. Neal is expected to become the boys' basketball coach out at Edgewood following a vote by the RBB school board on July 18th. According to the HT, Neal's candidacy for the job was first reported by the Greene County Daily World after he left his post as boys' basketball coach and athletic director at Shackamack. Prior to coaching the Lakers in 2015-16, Neal was the athletic director at White River Valley. Mick Hammett, who is the athletic director at Edgewood High School, declined to comment on the report other than to say Neal was one of six candidates who had been interviewed for the job. Neal led the Lakers to a 12-14 record last season, which was an improvement on their 5-18 finish back in 2014-15, and the Lakers made their Class 1A sectional title game as well, falling to eventual semi-state champ Bloomfield with a score of 56-34. So we'll know if we have a new high school boys basketball coach out at Edgewood coming up in the middle of July. Let's see what else we've got here that we didn't talk about just yet. Chicago Cubs. We missed this when we were talking about the Reds a few minutes ago. They are in a slump right now. They've had a little bit of a rough time. They're 52-33 overall, but they're still first in the National League Central. They are playing tonight as well against the Pittsburgh Pirates. And then they play three-game series with them tonight, Saturday, and Sunday. So hopefully we'll see some positive things coming for the Cubs. It may be because Mr. Piller has been using the sick bay here at WGCL. I can't promise that or anything, but I know that we wish the Cubs well. And one more. 2016 IU football schedule. When I have Mr. Piller here, I can get things done a little bit easier because he can talk when I'm looking for things and vice versa. Calendars came out over the last couple of days for IU football this fall. The first game of the season, September 1st at Florida International, and then the kickoff classic here in Bloomington on September 10th against Ball State. Then Wake Forest, Michigan State at Ohio State, Nebraska. We head to Northwestern in October 22nd, back home, Maryland, October 29th. That is the Hall of Fame weekend for IU Athletics. Rutgers, we go to Rutgers November 5th. Penn State comes to town November 12th. We head up to Michigan November 19th. And then, as usual, the last game of the season, Purdue comes to Bloomington November 26th for the Old Oak and Bucket game as well as Senior Day. All of this, of course, as Chuck Crabb would tell you, IUHoosiers.com. You can also call 866-IU-SPORTS for information, tickets, and all of that good stuff. We're going to take a break and wrap up the show. Stay with me. We'll be right back. Just a couple minutes left in the program. Thanks again for tuning in on your Friday evening or waking up with us on Saturday morning. Your forecast is not too shabby. 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms on Friday evening, mainly wrapping up anytime now. And then partly cloudy with a low around 67 tonight. Then on Saturday, sunny with a high near 83. Saturday night, beautiful if you're headed out to the fireworks either at Monroe County Fairgrounds or in Ellettsville. Low is going to be around 60. Grab a little blanket, take it with you, or as Dr. Piller would call it, a light wrap. Then on Sunday, it'll be sunny with a high near 82. Dry on Monday, but then a 30% chance of rain on Tuesday and Wednesday next week. Highs in the upper 80s early part of next week. Of course, all your weather all the time right here at WGCL Radio and WGCLRadio.com. It is the July Gallery Walk this evening going on until about 8 o'clock, so you can head downtown and see what's going on with that. That's a free event. Then on Saturday at 7:30 at the IU Theater on Jordan Avenue, Sense and Sensibility is a play that they are presenting there. The Paintown State Recreation Area out at the lake. Craig Brenner Music in Indiana State Park. You can go out and hear Craig Brenner play some percussion instruments at the Activity Center. That's a $7 in-state fee for residents. And then at the Bluebird on Saturday evening, Eric Hutchinson, singer-songwriter, a little bit of soulful pop music like rock and roll, and watching you watch him. He will be at the Bluebird on Saturday evening. Show starts at 9 o'clock, $20 cover for that. And at the Comedy Attic this weekend, Aparna Nancherla has her CD release party there. She's been on Late Night with Seth Meyers on NBC. Of course, again, the Monroe County Fairgrounds, their fireworks and event, if you will, starts about 5 o'clock on Saturday afternoon. Classic car show, a couple bands, all kinds of good food and everything. And then at 9:45 or so, right around dusk, the fireworks at the Monroe County Fairgrounds. Same time there for the fireworks out at Edgewood High School in Ellettsville. Head out there a little before 9 o'clock to get a good spot. Donations accepted at both places. So if you want and like and appreciate local fireworks and all that goes with it, this is your opportunity to step up to the plate a little bit and help out and make those fun events happen. Also coming up next Wednesday out at the Monroe County Fairgrounds, Bloomington Chamber of Commerce, my new employer, is hosting Primetime. It's kind of a business expo. We have about 60, 70 local businesses that will be appearing there. And then we also have a barbecue cook-off. Six different local barbecue grill masters are coming out. Samples for all of that. Everything is free. Cash bar, so if you want an adult beverage, you got to pay for it. But otherwise, you can come out for fun next Wednesday, the 13th, from 5 to 8 p.m. at the Monroe County Fairgrounds. Coming up in a couple weeks, Kent Rolfing from the Indiana State Police Department will be on the show. He is with the Drug Task Force with the Indiana State Police, so we will welcome him back. And Barrett Brewer Deal, whose husband Carl passed away a few years ago, and each year in August they do an event celebrating him and as a fundraiser as well. So she will be on to talk about the Blues Fest going on there. Thanks again for listening to me. Thoughts and prayers to everyone involved with Dallas. We'll talk to you all next week. Bye-bye.